You're tuned in to Muscle Car Radio.
Welcome to Muscle Car Radio. I'm Harry Christian. Another fresh episode for you. I've got my co-host, young Jason F6. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I've been really well. I've been reading all about the new ZL1 Camaro.
I did. I saw a brief thing about that today. Now, just a bit of... Just before we go on.
Yeah. Anyway, before we go on, let me introduce the other guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've got Connie Christian here today. Connie, how are you, mate?
G'day, Harry. How are you going, boys?
Yeah, and Graham Boyd. How are you, Graham?
Thank you very much. I'm going very good, Harry. Thank you.
Graham's joined us every now and then. He's with the Muscle Car, Midweek Muscle Car Club, and amongst other things, and does bits and pieces. He'll be popping in from time to time. So what are we saying, Jase?
A bit of turbo talk. I know this is a muscle car show, but you know, I thought we'd start off with some turbo discussion. In that same article that came out today, the latest new AMG A45 is going to produce 310 kilowatts.
Wow.
Yeah, I heard that, right? The pocket rocket.
Yeah. So my car, which is a 4.2-litre V8, does not produce 310 kilowatts.
Forced induction, Jase. I keep telling you.
No. I'm a stickler for natural.
Oh, you're a bit old school,
I'm old school, mate.
Speaking of cars that were rated very, very highly and had too much power, some years ago, there was a car produced by the Ford Motor Company called the Phase 4 GDHO. Do we all know about it?
We certainly do.
Right. So the Phase 4 GDHO, there was only one ever produced that was actually complied to Phase 4 GDHO, and it belongs to, as we know, the dentist, a very, very infamous car, very well known. Good news, we've got him on tonight. He's going to tell us all about it, how he came to own the car, how he came to restore the car, and he's going to run us through it. So I'm really, really excited. Looking forward to that, mate.
Well, fantastic. I'm super looking forward to it.
Yeah. So tell us, mate, the Camaro, have you...
Look, I saw the article briefly, but I didn't actually read into about the Camaro, but I know it's got some huge statistics coming out of it as
well. It's like 160 grand, the ZL1, right? Mm-hmm. The thing has an automatic transmission with 10-speed paddle shift. 10-speed automatic transmission. How does that go? The power output is like 477 kilowatts, 880-odd newton meters of torque. Thing is an absolute monster. 0 to 100 in 3.5 seconds. It's an absolute beast.
Wow. And look, that is unbelievable, phenomenal. But I actually skipped over it because it's a Chev, right? So
If it was a Ford,
I would have read it in a bit more detail.
Well, you can buy the standard version, which is the 6.2-litre, and then you can buy the 6.2-litre supercharged version, which is the ZL1. Comes with all the Brembos, all the gear, you know, the paddle shift auto. Just amazing. Look, 160 grand sounds like a lot of money, but when you get that sort of performance, I don't know how well it goes around corners at the end of the day. It is a Chevy, right?
And it is a young car.
And it is an American car, yeah. But 0 to 100 in 3.5 seconds, that's like Aston Martin, Ferrari sort of numbers. That's right up there. That is a lot.
Supercar numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
But the issue with those cars is actually it's becoming tyres. So actually putting all that grunt to the ground without losing traction. So that's where a lot of investment you have to make in is in tyres.
Yeah, that's right. It comes with a four freebies.
Just on things General Motors, I also did come across today. Today was good news day, actually, just very good timing for today's program, was that the last VF Series 2 V8 SS Commodore has been sold. They are no longer in existence from the dealerships.
Sad time, mate. Sad time.
It is.
Did you get your version, mate? It's going to be a bit of a collector in years to come.
No. I'm waiting for my G6E Turbo, which will come around at some point.
That's what Connie has, actually. He drives one of these. Connie, tell us about your G6. Haven't you got a souped-up version of a G6E? What is it?
It's my everyday cab. People jump in thinking it's a...
they jump the back seat.
Yeah, thinking it's a
The Uber driver's here.
So it's a black G6E, and I got it for quite cheap. It's amazing. We had a laugh earlier about forced induction. I was just, crapping on about that, Jase, saying you can't beat it. It's an inline six. It's a turbo. And I've done is added some injectors, a bigger intercooler, about $5,000 worth of work, and it ends up getting about 330 kilowatts at the wheels.
Jeez.
At the wheels,
yeah. It's a serious serious car.
And I've run it at Eastern Creek. Harry was there as a shitster. It's an open wheeler. It's not even a limited slip diff. It's a It's an open wheeler and it runs 11.9. So
wow,
not a bad effort.
Not bad, not bad.
And that's on gas as well.
Yeah, with the meter running.
And the aircon.
And the aircon, of course. No aircon, Sydney cab.
That's right.
So, James, what's happening in F1, mate? Have we got any F1 or supercar updates?
I do. I'll start off with supercar. So Craig McLaughlin... Scott McLaughlin has...
You can't the lounging.
Yeah, I was thinking of the lounging thing because he's got a comment that was in my head.
Yeah.
He is absolutely braining them this year. I'm a big follower of supercars, and I haven't seen this for quite a while. We've had the Wind Cup era, the SCAFE era before that. But in terms of the I think it's also the domination in terms of pole positions. Mm. Like the guy's stats for this year are just out of this world. Now
why is that, Jace? What's going on? Why is he so much better than the other drivers? Why is a car better?
Well, I think there's obviously natural talent there. Number one, mm-hmm. For Scott. I also think that he's basically the most talented driver in the series. He's in one of, if not the best teams with the best engineer, so that just translates to results, basically. Yeah. So I was a bit concerned, being a Ford fan, that with the usual General Motors holding, things with supercars, how if the Ford gets a little bit ahead, they start
tweaking
the rules
and
bringing
them back in.
Yeah.
Well, they did something early, didn't they? Didn't they pick back something off the idea? I can't really recall something to do with the bodywork.
Yeah, they did. They changed basically both the front the end plate on the rear spoiler, mm-hmm. and also took some under tray away from the front spoiler.
Right.
So basically, the gain was, and actually they've made another change as well. So they added ballast to the Mustang as well.
Right,
it was around 20 odd kilos. So when they did that, I thought, okay, this will be interesting.
It's interesting, yeah.
And he still kept going, and there's heads and shoulders above the rest of the field.
When you're on a roll, you're rolling. You're on a roll, I guess.
So look, just to give you an example, right? He's 244 points ahead.
Yeah.
Already. And he's in front of his teammate, right? So it's another Mustang.
So it's 1-2, right? 1-2 along the line.
It's 1-2. He's won 10 out of 14 races this year already.
Hard to beat. He's going to be hard to beat this year.
So
definitely.
The Mark Scaife has the record from 2012. That was a dark period of time for me personally.
No,
I do like Scaife. He's very good. But yeah, he won 15 out of 29 races.
Mm.
So, if you look, he's almost there already. He's only got to win another two races. So, and there's a round on this weekend up in Darwin. Mm-hmm. So if he keeps going, he's going to be a phenomenal effort.
Pretty amazing stuff.
So that's the V8s. The other one was, remember how we have touched on in the past, the TCRs.
Yeah. Tell us about that. I mean, Lenny was telling us, we had Len, XHDT Len in here. He'd been out and talked to some of the car teams out there, and it sounded pretty interesting.
It is. It's the best way, for people who haven't seen it, it's probably almost the equivalent to the old 2.2 litres, if you remember, mm-hmm. remember that mm-hmm. from the late 90s. When Brad Jones and Greg Murphy were in the Audis running around at that time. And, it's actually really, really good because the cars are not that much more modified than your standard road cars.
Yeah, right.
And obviously people are being attracted to it. So apparently they had over 5,000 spectators out at Eastern Creek. They've had 100,000 viewers on SBS. That was the Eastern Creek round, not the last round, mm-hmm. which was down at Phillip Island.
Almost as many as the Roosters game.
Yeah, that's right. 100,000 for the season.
There's only for that.
And 70,000 people watched via live stream. And so it's obviously gaining some huge traction in the market. And look, the groups that's behind TCR is actually looking to running a Bathurst event. Which then tunes into the application has been made for another Bathurst event.
So the attraction to people is what, Jace? Is it about the fact that it's not dissimilar to what they can go along to and buy in a showroom?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like the old days of, you buy it and then you take it down to the racetrack, have a spat, and people can relate to it as opposed to something which is a supercar.
Correct, and it's not that much changed from the road car.
Right.
And so, yeah, and you're right. And people can relate to it because now, as you know, we mentioned a few episodes ago, that the younger generations are more interested in or more attuned to watching, Honda Civics and the like. So
that'd be more Jack's our producer here tonight. He's a turbo scene. So that's not like us old farts.
Half these people wouldn't even know what an XU1 is.
I walked in and he said, "What are you talking about tonight?" I said, "The Phase 4 GDHO." He looked at me like glazed over. No, that's not true. He did actually know.
The Bathurst event that they're looking to run is actually as soon as next year, so 2020 they're looking to run this event. So fair play to them, and I hope it goes well, because the more motorsport that we have on, the better.
Absolutely. Very good. Anyway, look, we're going to take a break now. When we return, we're going to be talking to Paul Tobin. Paul is the owner of The Unicorn. Now, everybody talks about rare cars. Everybody talks about one-offs or one of two builds. This is the only factory-complied Ford Falcon Phase 4 GDHO that is in the XA model. Everybody knows the car, everybody in the scene anyway. He's going to tell us all about it. We're super excited. We're going to talk to you when we come back after the break.
Do you want to know the secret to having lean, powerful muscle?
There is no secret. You have to push it. Push it real good.
It's easier than that, big guy. Just go to musclecarsales.com.au. Looking for a supercharged XC Falcon Cobra, a tricked-out GTS Monaro, or even some American muscle? MuscleCarSales.com.au.
But Austrian muscle is the best!
Hey, Arnold.
Yeah, what?
Get back to your chopper, mate. MuscleCarSales.com.au. Real muscle.
Hello, welcome back to Muscle Car Radio. I'm your host, Harry Christian. Very, very excited. We've got Paul Tobin that's joining us. Now, everybody's heard about the dentist. We can't show you his face because he's a dentist, of course. Sorry, Paul, I had to throw that one in.
That's fine, Harry. Paul, actually, not a dentist. An orthodontist.
My apologies.
No, you're fine.
We know you're around the car traps as the dentist, right?
You've become
quite infamous here.
Both expensive.
Yeah. Both expensive. Paul... as he's told me many times, is the custodian of what is basically the most precious of all Australian muscle cars. He is the custodian, owner, whatever you like to call him, of the Phase 4 GDHO, the one and only that was complied by the Ford Motor Company before they made the decision to do away with building these things on account of what was the supercar scare back in the day. You remember that Connie Evan Green, the article?
The article from Milton Morris.
They were going to kill all these kids out there, these 160-mile-an-hour monsters.
Bullets on wheels, I think, Harry, what it was referred to.
Yeah, exactly right. Paul, you own this magnificent car. You've had it, I believe, since 1985, where you bought it. Tell us a little bit about how you came to acquire the car, and in your own words, just walk us through it, and we can just chinwag.
It was quite lucky that I procured the car, because on the particular day, I used to buy the Saturday papers regularly, but on this particular day, I had a friend who had a Haynes Hunter ski boat, and I had one myself at the time, but he'd asked me to come down for a rundown because it was a new experience putting the boat in and running around the harbour.
Yeah.
And I purchased the papers, and by the time I got to the ramp, they were already there waiting for me. So we spent the day on the harbour at Watson's Bay Hotel enjoying ourselves, and I didn't get back till late in the afternoon, about 4:15, 4:30. Uh-huh. And by that time, I just glanced at the papers, and we had no mobile phones. And the motoring section was quite a large section in those days. Yeah. And lo and behold, I saw this XA GTHO, and I had severe reservations because, like everybody else, the car didn't exist. And,
yeah, that's right.
And I sort of looked at it, and I thought, I haven't got my glasses, but I'm pretty sure I know what I'm reading. So I didn't have a mobile phone, but I headed down Silverwater Road, and there was a red phone box. And it was about 10 to 5, and I rang this number. And I'm not knowing if it was a yard or private number or what. And the guy was understandably a bit indignant at 10 to 5 that I've taken all day to ring about the car. So he just took my particulars and said he'd hand them over to the boss. And I passed on my home number. And following that, Bob LaHood the next day phoned me, and I actually saw the car on the Sunday afternoon.
Wow.
And the car wasn't on ramps. It had been bought previously by Kurt Gavoski, but the car was hidden away in a back room, so you couldn't see it from the street. So yeah. I didn't really have it for sale, like on the yard.
Yeah, no, it's because we see those very famous shots now, of course, with, you know, Phase 4 GDHO written all over, in the sign writing over the windscreen, and you see the car up on the ramps and what have you. But that obviously was from a different time. So you've gone in, you've had a look at the car, and you thought, oh, hang on, this is for real. You've had a look at the compliance plate and what have you, and then you thought, well, that's a bit of me, right?
I was doubting at the time because, you know, everyone – but it was quite interesting. We went into this back room and Bob had an XY GT there, a Vermilion Fire, I think, and he was sort of asking if I was interested in that, being a red car, and he was sort of sussing me out a little bit, I think, because I wasn't it wasn't what I was expecting, I think. And anyway, then we went to another room and sure, lo and behold, was this car, and I wasn't expecting the colour. The colour got me a little bit, and I had my doubts about it. It had silver blackouts and... It seemed a nice car, but it wasn't quite what I was expecting.
Yeah.
But the compliance plate won me over. Mm-hmm. But even then, I had my doubts. So I sort of said to Bob, I really want to speak to another party, and I was meeting Ford. And that was on the Sunday afternoon. On the Monday morning, I rang Ford, and I was given a rather hard time by the person on the end of the line because they were asking me why I was asking about this particular car.
Of course, everybody was a bit – they were all a bit anxious about it at the time, of course, with all the publicity and what have you, right?
Speak about it.
Yeah.
Paul Bianco, who was the service manager, and Paul Lloyd, who I know – Paul Bianco's not with us anymore, but they told me there was a subject that wasn't spoken about a lot. There was a denial that the car existed.
Well, the whole idea is, of course, after the whole, Evan Green article and the scare, Ford and in fact, GM and Chrysler turned around and said to the government said to those guys, if you persist with these supercars, we're simply not going to buy any more cars off you for fleet purposes. They, of course, then went quickly and canned all of these, next rounds of supercars. And, of course, now it's all history. But you talk about the compliance plate. I remember when I first met you some time ago, you were telling me a very interesting story about the one and only time prior to recent days when you took it out to, I think it was Warwick Farm, you were telling
Correct.
Me. It was, yeah.
Yes, that was in the first year, 1985, at Warwick Farm. And
the old Ford day, right?
That's correct, yes. And we didn't – that was probably the first or second time I'd taken the car out. So I'd purchased it in January and we'd sort of put it away and I didn't drive it a lot and I took it out about July and we went to Warwick Farm and we were too late to put it on display, but David Bowden was down from Queensland with some of the GT guys – sorry, the Queensland GT Club guys – and they were out the back at Warren's where they used to do the detailing. I think it's all changed now, but it was just an area that was off the beaten track as far as the rest of the display was. And a father and son combination had decided they might remove the compliance plate.
Lovely.
Jeez. The damage is still, you can see where it was actually chiseled off with a small screwdriver.
Unbelievable. Yeah, how would you be? Anyway, I'm glad that didn't happen at the end of the day because you've got quite a bit of history there, of course. And I'd imagine over the years, and you've had the car restored ever since that time, you sort of went under wraps for a long, long time, and then you brought it out some years ago, and we followed it, of course. There's a Facebook page called Team Phase 4, of course.
Yes,
I think Roy Velarde runs that, and he has well documented the restoration process and what have you over time. And, of course, and now it makes appearances at the All Four Days and different shows and is quite the hit, to say the least. So we're really pleased to get it out and about, but... How did you come to want to restore this? Because I thought it looked pretty good in the first place, right?
I thought it needed it had a sort of cheap paint over job with the zircon green. Mm. And when you were up close, I actually have a video that Bob LaHood and I did the Saturday after the car was picked up. So the car was picked up on the Tuesday after I saw it on the Sunday. On the following Saturday, I went down to Bob's yard. And we took some video, which is very much homemade, but I'm hoping to put that out so the public can actually hear, see, and get an appreciation of what the car was like when I actually bought it.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, you say the purchase. Is it rude to ask the purchase price? And you don't have to tell me. Of course, in recent times, there have been approaches, and I personally know of people that are willing to pay, many millions of dollars, I think, for this car being the unicorn and the one-off. It's not about the money for you. Of course, you're the custodian of the car and you love this. interesting. But back in the day, what was the car? What did it cost? If you don't mind telling us, Paul.
Well, I'm led to believe there might have been some errors in Roy's book, but I don't want to in any way criticise Roy for his effort there. But I was led to believe, I was speaking to Nick Moran, a friend of mine, and he was keen to purchase the car first time round. That's when Kurt Kowalski bought it, and I believe he bought it for about $16,990 the first time. Wow. I paid, I believe, $20,000.
Still a lot of money in 1985, right?
When was the $16,990 offered? What year was that? Same year that you bought it?
No, that was purchased in May 1981. That was a few years before me.
That was a lot of money in 1981.
Almost half a house back in the day.
Bought it back in 83 for $14,000 from Kurt.
Wow. Well, it's probably relative. If that's half a house, then, you know, it's probably worth half a house, guys.
Put it into perspective. What was 84? What was a VK Brock worth at the time? 28, 30?
Yeah. I think it was.
Yeah. So really, it's not really a lot of money if you know what you're buying, really. Mm-hmm. But putting it into perspective, a normal XA GT back in those days was, you know, $8,000 or $9,000 you've got to weigh it up, and you had the foresight, obviously, to know what it was, and knowing it was a one off, it was always going to gain value.
It was a slightly different time frame, but it was 1989. I was going to buy my first car, which we all know was a Mitsubishi Scorpion.
2.6 Astron big block.
That's right. Yes. But I had the option to buy an XB GT. Mm-hmm. Wow. 4.9 liter, a yellow one with black stripes.
Not a GT.
Yep. And I decided to get the Scorpion.
Well done, mate. We'll come back to you later. Thanks for coming in. So Paul, the story goes that in the day, correct me if I'm wrong, I think 200 had to be made, built for homologation purposes. And these things were rated for 160 mile an hour. They had all the gear on. This particular car of yours is a white trim Calypso green car with a factory sunroof, right? And I'd imagine, of course, does it have all the go fast bits as far as phase four, like the carby and the wing sump? Yeah, it does.
We've had that verified by a number of people, notably Dean Hampton from Perth.
No, Dean very well.
Who's quite an authority on XAs, well, GTs in general, but he spent weekends with us and Paul Lloyd, and they sort of pulled it down and checked certain items to make sure they were the right items. And that's where the restorations have come in. Where we found we didn't have the right item, I'm talking about the side mirrors. That was on the restoration that was done most recently. Then we found out that they weren't quite correct. So we're sort of always going back trying to, get it correct to the nearest that we can.
Excellent. Look, my brother Connie here, he's an XA tragic, and he much regrets selling his most recent Pepper Red car, and he can tell you all about it. But he's got a question for you, and I thought I'd leave it to him to ask you this question because he's been dying to ask you this, Paul. Go ahead, Connie, ask Paul.
Well, it's a multifaceted question, Paul. Firstly, people kept saying to me, the reason you prefer the XA is because you've never driven or owned a square car. But that not being the fact, I've had a Gresham Gold Phase 1 XW. Yeah. I've had a Ra Yellow XY GT as well, and all sorts of other cars, XBs. But nothing quite drove like the XA GT. Can you tell us, and I know you've owned quite a few other cars as well, so it's not just the Phase 4. How is it in your own opinion? How does it compare to every other GT model or any other muscle car that you've driven, and in particular the Phase 4?
Comparing it to, say, I have a Phase 2 and a Phase 3, you can see the evolving nature and in the way the car drives. I particularly like the layout of the cockpit. The handling, and I've heard other people like Fred Gibson describe the car compared to, say, the Phase 3, it would tend to handle better. And even the other day at the Sydney Olympic Park, we were up with Paul Carthew. It was quite amazing. We were sort of barely out of first gear, and there was some unreal video taken by the people from Unique Cars. And I just feel it's got a lot more stick than the Phase 3. Definitely. That's my personal view, and a few other people that have driven the car feel that.
Well, that was the idea, right? You went from phase one to twos to the threes, and of course they got better along the way. The two was a very raw car, you know, didn't have the rev limiter and what have you, the Cleveland phase twos.
Yeah.
But, by the time they got to the phase four, of course, they kept refining and refining. But I think the dynamics of that XA chassis were just a lot better. I think they were the first.
Certainly.
They were the first totally Australian-designed Ford from chassis up, from my understanding, as in. So I just think they're just a nice thing.
And by far the best looking.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. But not that you're biased or anything like that.
No. Yeah. I have to agree with you, Con. The XA.
They're tough, aren't they?
No doubt. The best looking.
And Calypso Greens are very
striking
colour. Just the colour.
It's a great
the combination car. Just like second to none.
Look, when they sit on the road, they feel like they command the road. The XYs and the XWs, great cars. A bit twitchy, though. You know, the chassis dynamics and you let them loose.
A bit of body roll,
whereas the XA just seems to hit. And then by the time we got to the XBs, of course, they were, you know, laden with less power and pollution stuff and bits and pieces. But anyway, that's by the by. But so Paul, you restored the car, you went on, and now it's out and about, and people can sort of you're doing the rounds. I know that Roy did some features on his in his Ford magazine. I think it's All Fords, he calls it. And from time to time, we see bits and pieces. What is the future plan? Is it just to stay with the car, keep it, and enjoy?
I've got sort of a bucket list. I just want to include some video footage of people that have helped me with the car. Mm-hmm. This includes people that have been instrumental in getting the car back on the road, the way, even with the early restorations, the Borg family, Sash, Roy so much. I can't thank Roy enough because he put it out in magazine form, and he did so much research. I feel sorry in some ways he's been criticised in some quarters, but there was a lot of competition to restore that particular car.
Yeah, I would imagine. Kudos, and what about bragging rights to take that car on and restore it? I mean, it's a one-off. And I'll come back to it. I just had a thought, but you continue what you're saying.
Basically what I want to do is just put together a video, like I said, some of that early footage I've got with the car, and try and just put it out there for the public to see it. And then I think my time will be up with the car because I'm not getting any younger, and I just feel I just hope someone can sort of love it as much as I have and sort of enjoy it.
Fair play to you. No, and good for you, and good for thank you for sort of letting us giving us access to the car at the different shows and what have you, and through the magazines. And Roy's doing a terrific job because he's definitely keeping the legacy going. Now, I just wanted to touch on, we talk phase four, and you know, we know of the I think, was it called Skunk Works, the cars that were actually built. Yeah, so the Skunk Works cars that were built by Ford for racing, they were never complied GTHOs. People label them GDHOs, but yours was definitely the only one that was complied by Ford as a Phase 4 GDHO XA.
Road car, yes.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, excellent. Well, what can I tell you? It's been an absolute pleasure, boys. I don't know if you have any more questions for Paul. We really, really appreciate you taking the time. As I say, as far as you're making the car available, making your time available, we do appreciate it because it's definitely a part of Australian motoring history that we all appreciate and love. Paul, hang on, one thing I tell you, Paul. Did we tell the boys about the badge, the console badge? Do you remember that story?
Yes, I do indeed. That's how I met Harry.
That's how we met. Yeah.
Putting the little bits all together, and that's just another part of the, you know, like getting the right badge for that car, and that it needed that badge.
That's it. Back in the day, a guy came across a business that I was involved with at the time, and he said to me, "I've got this original Phase 4 badge." And the story went, the one that sat on the console, you know,
GT badge.
So apparently what happened, this car once, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, he said, this is what he claimed when he approached me when I was selling these things. He said to me, look, this badge is the genuine Phase 4 GT. It came out of the green car. The car came in to be fitted with an under-dash air conditioning system, so they had to cut the console. He took the badge off the console, sat it on his bench, and his son then took the badge, to tech and traded it for a packet of cigarettes back in the day. I'm feeding him, like a packet of Winnie Blues or something. So the guy that ended up with his badge many years later came across it, approached me, and we ended up, and Paul, of course, ended up with it, and it's gone back to its rightful place sitting on that beautiful console in that gorgeous car. I think that's how the story goes, right, Paul?
That's absolutely correct. It was Bob Morris's air conditioning place in the southern suburbs.
Wow, what an amazing story. Paul, thanks again. I really look forward to catching up with you at another show, and really thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much, Harry and the guys, but I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. Thank you. Good on you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Well, you've been listening to Muscle Car Raiders. I tell you what, that is probably one of the most compelling interviews of all time. Paul and the loveliest guy, he's the loveliest fellows, guys. When you go out and meet this guy, Paul, at the shows, he always takes the time. He will always walk you through the car. He's just an absolute gentleman and a gem of a good bloke. So I don't think the car could have ended up in nicer hands. So thank him. Amazing story.
Not only that, it's one of the most historical cars in Australian history, I think.
Historically significant, definitely.
Just an amazing story, an amazing car, and yeah.
What about the combo? Yeah, I mean, you go and build a Phase 4, you could have done it in anything, but they did an Calypso Green, which is a gorgeous colour.
Yeah. The best colour.
White trim, which is like to die for. Sunroof. And sunroof, right?
And sunroof. Okay.
And then fully loaded with all the go-fast bits, and it's just such a good thing. And, you know, I personally know of collectors and people that I've been in touch with that will pay, you know, they'll pay a couple of million bucks for this car, which is probably what it's probably worth, I would imagine.
It's pretty much a show-shopper combination.
If you think of the ultimate Phase 3, I'm talking about the best Phase 3, that's probably about $1 million car in this day and age. Mm. An average one is 500 to 600, a real good one 700. The ultimate one's probably about $1 million, you know, a very rare thing. You'd have to pay at least double that for the one and only Phase 4, I would imagine.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway, look, thanks, boys. I'm wrapped. That was a really good
I
really
forgot nice to movie. Ask him again, one final question is when I can take it for a drive.
Yeah, you'll have to wait behind me. Jace, what do you reckon, mate?
You and me both.
You reckon it'll compete with the old Starion?
No, actually, my point of that story was it was actually $10,000. They were the same price back in 1989.
Yeah, that's the way. Look, we all have those stories. And what I think a good segment for us going forward is probably going to be the ones that got away. How many cars have we had? Mm. How many have we sold for nothing? But
or how many have we got rid of?
Yeah, you can't you can't dwell on it. I mean, I know Graham's a pacer nut, right? I had Valiant Pacers that I think I've said this before. Mm-hmm. I used to buy them off the street and sell them to Roddy the Wrecker down at St. Peter's.
Good old Roddy on Tempe's Highway.
Tempe. Mm-hmm. Enfield Spares. And we used to, in those days, get back the rego. I think I've mentioned it before.
Yep.
So you could hand in whatever the balance of the rego and they pay you cash over the counter at the then RTA.
Yeah.
It didn't go into a credit. And, of course, then we sold it to Roddy the Wrecker for parts and he'd pay a few $100s. Yeah, you buy these things off the street for $500.
Yeah.
You'd end up with $1,000. That's how we made our pocket money.
Absolutely.
Anyway, we reminisce. Thanks for listening. Well, after the break, we're going to come back and we're going to chinwag a little bit more about F1 and Graham's going to tell us a little bit about what he's been up to. And thanks for listening to Muscle Car Radio. Hey, welcome back. Muscle Car Radio. Jace, how good was that? Speaking to Paul, what a lovely, lovely bloke.
Mate, it's absolute pleasure listening to Paul. It was really, really interesting.
And I'm serious to think that, to say that you know, I'm so glad he's the custodian of that car.
Yeah.
It couldn't have gone to a nicer bloke because he's a gentleman, attends the shows now, goes out of his way to show people. I mean, he gets a lot of support from Roy and the guys and, you know, the GT Club here in New South Wales and stuff, so they do help him out. But, yeah, a really nice guy. And if you ever get the opportunity, go out and have a look at the car.
The big thing out of that, he sort of hinted, basically, it's he's looking to put it on the market.
Yeah, look, I don't know whether he's going to put it on. No, I don't know whether he's going to put it on the market or whether he gives it to a museum. I don't know. Paul will make the call, and it's the sort of car that you'd put it out to market and see what the marketplace has to say. It's one of those serious cars that would attract all and sundry, you know, for the next 20, 30 years or
absolutely,
whatever, for the next custodian. You know, as I said, we're all custodians of these things. We love these things, right? And we treat them like, you know, they're going to come to the grave with us. But at the end of the day, really, we enjoy them and then move them on and somebody else enjoys them and so it goes. But, mate, speaking of Fords, Ford versus Ferrari, have you seen this thing about Le Mans, the movie that's coming out?
Yes.
I'm seeing the shorts. How good is that going to be?
I have seen the trailer and I think it's absolutely phenomenal. It's fantastic.
And the cast, like it's got all and somebody.
Yep. And to be honest, I saw it and I was – sort of went, oh, okay.
Mm.
And then I saw who was in it.
Yeah.
And I went, wow, this is actually
Christian Bale.
Yeah. And this is a story about a car. But what a fantastic car, and what a fantastic story.
Well, you know the story. So the story goes: Henry Ford II approached Enzo Ferrari, and they had a handshake on selling Ferrari to become the performance arm of Ford back in the day. And of course, Enzo, pressure from nationalists and other Italian sort of industrialists, said, "You can't sell Ferrari. It's an Italian icon. You can't sell it to the Americans. You can't be doing this." So he reneged on the deal, and Ford said, "Really? Okay. Is that what you're going to do?" So he said, "I'm going to build a car, and I'm going to beat you at Le Mans." And they all laughed at him, of course. And I think it was 4 years on the trot or something like that through the 60s, through 66 and whatever. So, yeah.
So, guys, just touching on that, I just want to say that Midweek Muscle Car Club, in conjunction with a few other people on board, we're going to host an event on the 14th of November coming up for this actual event at Blacktown Movie.
A screening of the movie? Yeah,
absolutely.
I'll be there. Yeah, for
this
sure.
This is going to be a massive event. We're looking at pretty much hosting two fields, and we're trying our best to accommodate up to 500 cars.
Excellent.
So this is a big, big movie. As you know, it's based on something that Carol Shelby's doing. And the history of this thing is, I guess, it's going to be big and...
The history is big, right? Carol Shelby was the guy who was commissioned by Ford to build this all-out powerhouse to go out and whip the Ferraris as they did.
That's
and,
right,
of course, those cars now are revered and are for some of the most expensive classics in the world. Yeah. But, yeah, that should be very interesting. Well, mate, I'll tell you, we, in the future, as we do more episodes, and we'll broadcast it on our Facebook and what have you, we'll come back to it and let you know. Mate, so that's that. F1, we didn't touch on F1, Jase.
No, we didn't. And I know that in our last episode that we wanted to talk about our Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah.
So...
how's he going?
Well... look, I know that, we've talked about previously, and he's, he's got a career. So it's a limited lifespan, especially in F1.
So we were talking about, did he make the right move moving away from Red Bull to, which are the Honda-powered cars now, to Renault and persist with what were problematic Renault engine cars.
Yep.
And they threw some really big dollars at him.
Yep.
He was having trouble with his, getting his head above the status back in the day with the Red Bull team or with his teammate.
Yep.
So is he happier now at Renault?
Look, I wish I did, but I don't. I don't know Daniel personally, but persona that I see online and through the media is he does seem happier. Yep, I definitely think that. Mind you, $49 million per year over a 2-year deal puts a smile on your face.
Yeah, a few Nikes there.
I do worry about Dan because he actually is, as we all know, he's a fantastic talent and ambassador for Australian motorsport. There's no doubt about it. And you don't get the F1 into that position without being hugely talented.
Oh, there's no doubt about
it. He's an absolute superstar. But when I say that, if you just look at just some, we all go back to statistics because that's how everybody looks back on in history. So, as of his results since he's moved to Renault, and mind you, this is a 2-year trip or journey. So we're halfway through the first year, and it's turned, but we've only seen one round. So I think the next round is really going to be see how Renault performs against their competition.
Yeah.
If he can work his way up, but if you see the reaction, in my view, let's just be really black and white here. If you're celebrating a top 10 finishers like you've won, Tui's 1000, it's really, things are sort of not quite right there. Yeah. So, but the reason why they are celebrating is he's currently 8th in the championship.
Right.
Okay. So if we quickly run through the last few rounds, so Melbourne, we know what happened there. That's right. Bahrain, we know what happened there. In China, he finished 7th, one lap down.
Yep.
In Azerbaijan, DNF.
Yep.
In the Spanish Grand Prix, he was 12th.
DNF, I love that sir.
Yeah, that's great. Monaco, he was 7th. Now, that might look good at face value, but he was 60 seconds behind Hamilton, which equates to almost one lap as well. And now in Canada, the last he was sixth, so which was actually fantastic.
You know, yeah, getting up there.
He was getting up there. He's still one lap down. So now I've done a bit of reading and research. So if you have a look, basically the problem with the Renault has been handling and ride, etc.
Yeah. And it's in chassis dynamics, right?
Correct. So he's in this is in the last Grand Prix in Canada. So his Ricciardo's fastest lap was on lap 56. Vettel's fastest lap was on lap 65 and Hamilton 66. And he's still 1 second off the pace.
Yeah.
So if you look at that, they've got, if you look at the straight numbers, they've got a bit of development.
They've got a bit of work to do. Look, as long as he's happy, and I'm sure the $47 million will go a long, long way. And I hope he does do well because he's very passionate. And he's, like you say, their time, just like a footballer or any athlete, is only they've only got so many years. But I'm sure he'll do very well. Follow up, mate, and let us know next episode how
it's all going. Yes. I will come back to you.
Excellent. Now that was a fantastic update. Thank you, mate. So we've covered the Le Mans movie. I can't wait for that. And Graham, we're going to get to the pictures, mate, and we'll get the boys down there. F1, supercars. Graham, I need you to let us know what you're up to, mate, with the Midweek Muscle Car Club and bits and pieces. And, of course, we also have a special guest. Rosanna's joined us. She's going to tell us a little bit about a thing called Dravet's Syndrome. And there is a Dravet's Syndrome Foundation. One of our members and car enthusiasts has a situation which Rosanna can tell us all about. And we're supporting and getting behind the Dravet's Syndrome Foundation. So Rosanna, welcome. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, really well. Tell us about Dravet's Syndrome. What is all that about?
Dravet's Syndrome is a rare form of epilepsy in which currently there's no cure. It actually affects over 1 million individuals.
Wow.
And it just affects every aspect of their lives.
Yeah.
And so the mission of the Dravet Syndrome Foundation is just to raise funds for research, increase awareness, and to provide support to affected individuals and to give relief to their families.
Excellent. And of course, the more awareness we raise through the sort of things Graham's doing with the club and of course, the Facebook page and all the social media, of course, that goes a long, long way. So, Graham, terrific, Rosa. Thank you for that. So, Graham, tell us, well, what's the club doing, mate? Are we sort of raising money? What are we doing to sort of assist in this area, I would imagine?
Yeah, so at the moment, we're going to be doing an event at the Grounds Alexandria in September.
Sydney, yep,
which is in Sydney. That's correct. In 2019, so we're waiting for a little bit of the warmer weather, and we're going to do an event based on the Dravet syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much what we're
Dravet syndrome is going
to
be the theme, right? And we're raising money for the foundation. Yep.
That's correct. That's Excellent. Correct. We have a couple of members in the club who I guess go through this on a daily basis.
So family members that suffer?
That's correct.
Yep.
That's right. So what we're going to do, we're going to organise an event at the grounds. We're going to allocate 60 to 70 cars in a Pacific closed off car park. It's going to be like a show and shine event. Not only that, we're going to also have like a 3-course meal where people can sit down, have a meal, get involved in this. Also, we're going to raise valuable funds to try and help people going through this kind of...
Bit of support.
Yeah.
Yeah, good
exactly
on you.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Excellent. What a really worthwhile cause. And, of course, we'll, again, advertise in future episodes. We'll bring it to the attention of our Facebook followers and just general social
Absolutely.
Media.
Absolutely.
So that's terrific. All right, we've had a great episode. I've really been... And we've met Jack for the first time, our producer. Jack, welcome aboard, mate. How are you going? Excellent.
Welcome, Jack.
So we're here at Radio Hub Studios, and the boys here have been terrific. Rosanna's come in. Thank you, Rosanna, for coming in
Thank
and explaining
you for
all.
Me.
Yeah, my absolute pleasure. And we'll be back again in a little while, a few weeks, I'm guessing, Chase.
We will be. Just one very, very quick
thing.
This weekend, it's Le Mans.
Le Mans.
It's on at, well, starts at 3 p.m. local time, so French time, Central European time, which is 11 p.m. This Saturday night, Australian Eastern Standard Time.
Excellent. I look forward to that. Okay, it's been a terrific, terrific episode. Really enjoyed speaking with Paul and having everybody in. You've been listening to Muscle Car Radio. I'm Harry Christian. Tune in next time.